Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Fentanyl is an opioid that's up to 50 times stronger than heroin and 100 times stronger than morphine. It's a major contributor in deadly and even non-fatal overdoses across the United States. Recently, this month, I was reporting on this substance. It's been called rainbow fentanyl. In fact, the Drug Enforcement Agency is warning parents specifically about this, because the drug is being seen in multiple forms, like multicolored pills, even powder looking like candy or sidewalk chalk. I mean, it just screams children. And, you know, as I was reporting on this a few weeks ago, I thought to myself, you know, something that really hit home for me in the 90s was going through the D.A.R.E. program. It was at North Stratfield Elementary School in Fairfield. I had an amazing experience with the D.A.R.E. program. I loved it. And believe it or not, I can't speak for all my classmates, but I could speak for this girl right here, Melissa Shakatov. I never have touched a drug, an illegal drug in my life. Now, when pot became legal in Vermont, just so that I'm clear with everyone before you go fact-checking me, yes, I did try pot once, had no interest in it after that. But other than that, I've never even picked up a cigarette in my life. And a lot of that did come from the truths that I learned as early as elementary school about drugs. And so it made me sort of think, okay, if that resonated with me in the 90s and the biggest thing we were scared of in that day, I think were cigarettes, but I would say the most dangerous out there that we learned about was probably heroin and cocaine. I think those were like the biggest ones that they were like, hey, you're going to hear about these when you get older. Run away from them like the plague. So I want to know what the D.A.R.E. program looks like today in 2022. How has it evolved? Is it still in a lot of schools? So for all of those questions, I am going to aim them towards Trooper First Class James White, who's with the Connecticut State Police and also the Connecticut State D.A.R.E. coordinator. So good morning to you, James. Thanks for being here. How are you?
Good. Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
So first of all, James, how long has D.A.R.E. been active in Connecticut? Because I know I was sort of curious if it's dissolved at all, if it's gotten stronger, has it stayed the same? What is like the current status of it in Connecticut?
D.A.R.E. was started in the early 80s. We picked it up about a year after it started in California. We've been running fairly strong throughout that time in Connecticut. COVID was a pretty big dip for us just because it was difficult for us to transition to e-learning and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So we're in a giant build-back phase right now. We're growing pretty rapidly. We just had 31 officers become certified in D.A.R.E. in July. We're tentatively going to be looking for about that same number again, February, March timeframe. And we're just building back from massive retirements and other things that were going on. But we're actively growing throughout the state. So we're starting new programs all over the place. So that's been great for us.
And when you look at the curriculum that D.A.R.E. is bringing to Connecticut students, first of all, is it still targeting elementary school students for the most part?
So we know that like fifth, sixth grade is a very, very pivotal age to get this information to our students. But we do have curriculum K through 12. So D.A.R.E. itself is really the delivery tool. And then the curriculum is a curriculum called Keeping It Real. It is developed at a Penn State University, and it's academia. It's based in academia. And it's kind of evidence-based and evidence testing, and it hits a lot of the social-emotional learning objectives that we're looking for in those Common Core objectives for the state of Connecticut. But so the answer is yes, you know, heavy fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth. And then we do have curriculum that we can range and sit in and talk to students K through 12, because there is a spectrum of learning that's happening there.
So we're talking this morning to Trooper First Class James White, and we're talking about the D.A.R.E. program. How has the D.A.R.E. program changed over time, James? I think, as you heard me talk about before, my biggest concern is that the war on drugs, you know, it hasn't slowed at all. It hasn't slowed up at all. But the thing that's scary is fentanyl. And the reason it scares me is because I have a lot of people who I talk to either off the air or during my shows who still have no idea what fentanyl is or had no idea that it's been around for as long as it has. They thought it just popped up a couple years ago and that it's not as big of a threat as it's being made out to be. And the reason I think the D.A.R.E. program is so important is because if parents don't know about it, at least their kids are learning about it and can say, hey, do you know this? This is what I learned in DARE, or they're aware of it so that parents don't have to go through the nightmare of wondering, gee, if my kid tries pot in college, is it going to be laced with fentanyl? Or gee, if my kid has a back injury and orders pills online, is it going to actually be fentanyl pills?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously we want to, educate our students. So there has been an evolution in DARE, but there's also been an evolution in our students, right? So we're always trying to keep up with the common issues that we're seeing at a local level, at a state level. And then we're also very privileged, because it is an international program, that we get a lot of research and data from around the country, from around the world. So we try and tie all those things in together to appropriately apply the program to each individual classroom. And, you know, that's really the name of the game, right? Because we want these kids to be educated and aware. But the real crosshair of the issue, it's problem-solving and decision-making. So that's the big part of the curriculum, is teaching kids tools and resources to make good choices, smart choices, responsible choices, understand what risk and consequence are, and that there's a consequence in every action that we take, whether it's positive or negative.
And how many classes do students take when they're in the DARE program?
So for the Keeping It Real curriculum, we have a curriculum for elementary level and then a Keeping It Real for middle school level. Those are going to be 10 classes, 45-minute to hour blocks, and those are solid 10 classes. And then in the high school level, we have another program, and that's four, like, one-hour blocks.
And my last question for you, Trooper First Class James White, I'm curious, with DARE, how many schools in Connecticut, and again, this can be kind of ballpark, would you say the majority of schools still utilize DARE, or have you seen a drop in that? Has it stayed consistent?
So we're in a state of flux right now. So we have maybe about a third of the schools in the state, maybe more. So we're trying to figure out which programs are coming back after COVID. This is a great rebuild year for us, and we're trying to figure out exactly how many schools that we're in. I know that there's tons of other programs out there. At the end of the day, we're really grateful that we're getting officers in front of students to teach. You know, we know that teachers are burnt out, and it gives a little bit of a reprieve for teachers when an officer can come in and teach an appropriate curriculum and help out. And then become another trusted adult for those students. And that's what we want, is we want students to have a positive relationship with law enforcement, that they can come forward and feel comfortable asking questions and get, a real answer from us.
Well, Trooper First Class James White, I'm really glad you could come on this morning. I'd love to have you come back on, especially as the school year continues on and you guys rebuild and bring on more folks to do this program, and more schools hopefully bring you back, because I really do think it's such an important part of the curriculum that cannot be removed. I really do appreciate the work that you guys do, and I thank you for coming
on
to share
with
us this morning.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you.
All right. Well, I appreciate it again. That is Trooper First Class James White, again, the Connecticut State DARE coordinator, also here on WICC. I am excited to welcome to the show this morning Fire Chief Jermaine Atkinson from the town of Stratford. Good morning to you, Chief. Thank you so much for being here. How are you? All right. There we go. I think we've got him connected now. Sorry about that, Chief. How are you?
Good. How are you? Good morning.
I'm good. I'm so glad that you're with us. Thank you so much for your time. We're going to be talking a little bit about smoke alarms and just house fire safety, obviously. But first and foremost, when would you say, Chief, in your professional opinion, when do we start to see sort of an uptick in house fires? Wouldn't you say it's kind of the holiday season, like when it starts to get colder outside?
Yeah, that's always when we see an increase. When you get towards the holiday season, as the weather starts to change outside, people start getting a little cold, and the furnaces start to come on, that's when the increase in fires do happen at this time. So we always have a nice push to take care of that as far as maintenance, chimney maintenance, furnace maintenance, in order to do that to keep the residents safe.
So it's certainly still relatively pretty nice outside. We've got the 60s and low 70s, so it's not too bad. But what would you say are some of the most common reasons for house fires in the late fall, early winter seasons?
Well, what I would say is that sometimes when people are just firing up those furnaces and they're not maintained, that would be a problem, as well as when people are using campfires outside, or residents who are using, like, stoves in order to heat their houses sometimes. So we always encourage people to get in contact with social services to get heating oil and to get the resources that they need in order for them to be as safe as they can as they try to heat up for the winter.
Chief Atkinson, how long have you been working with the Stratford Fire Department?
I've been with the Stratford Fire Department since July of 2001.
Okay, that's amazing. Thank you for the work that you do. And is that when you also became a firefighter, or had you been working prior to that?
Yes, that's when I became a firefighter for the town of Stratford, and I've been fortunate throughout my career to go from a firefighter, and I've made it to the fire chief as of July of this year.
That's amazing. Well, congratulations. That's incredible.
Thank you.
So the reason I ask that is because I think you and I both know. I've worked in news now for almost 13 years, and I think one of the most frustrating things in all of the house fires I cover, or I've covered in the news, is that I'd say I would feel pretty confident that maybe 75% of them, it could have been a lot better outcomes, if you will, or people could have been not as hurt or had pets trapped, things like that, if they had working smoke detectors. Tell us, if you don't mind, how common it is that people just don't check on their detectors, install them, check the batteries, all of that.
Well, actually, Melissa, it's more common than you think. We found through our connection with the American Red Cross, we have a partnership with them where they provide smoke detectors that we go out and install them in the community. We found that more often than not, there are residents that have no fire protection, people who take the batteries out, don't check them. And so we've done a really serious push over the last year to get more smoke detectors in people's homes, to educate more about fire safety, and to keep the community safe. What I always like to say is that fire prevention is something that we need to do every day. Our members are trained to do so. We go out in the schools, and it's very important that we have that, because early detections would actually save lives. We would rather the smoke detector go off and alert you ahead of time, where you can still self-extricate while the fire department is still en route to your location. And by having a working smoke detector, a home escape plan, a safety plan, that's what's going to give you the best outcome. We want everyone to be safe in their homes. You know, that's your haven where you're comfortable. So we want you to be safe there. We want your kids to be safe, to have a good plan in order to be able to evacuate the house in a timely manner.
So we're chatting this morning with Stratford Fire Chief Jermaine Atkinson, and we're talking about fire safety. We're getting into the colder months. Tomorrow is October, so I think it's important that we talk about the importance of things like having smoke detectors. Why is it, do you think, Chief Atkinson, that people don't take the time to invest in their smoke detectors or have them checked? I mean, does it really come down to a cost thing, or is it really just, I don't want to say laziness, but just not putting it at top of mind, thinking it's not going to be me? You know, even the idea of, like, I've gone to houses before, and I'm sure you have too, Chief, where people will have it, like, in their front entry. Okay, fine. But I go into, like, the kids' bedrooms, and there are none. I go into their master bedroom, there's none. I go in their kitchen, there's none. And I'm like, why don't you have them in every single room? And they're like, well, as long as you got one, you know, it'll suffice. And I'm like, not at all, actually. It could not be further from the truth. So why do you think, has this always been an issue in your professional opinion, that people just, it's not at top of mind, or we just don't think it's that big of a deal?
I think sometimes that we're so busy in life that we're trying to get to work and get with the rat race that we tend to forget some of those things. I've been to homes where the smoke detector is chirping and it's going off, and it's like a background noise after a while. So we always recommend that, you know, people, that's why those promotions are out, to push that, to check your batteries when you change your clocks, change your batteries, to kind of develop that routine. And once you develop that routine, that's just going to keep you the safest. So we always recommend that they're outside of the sleeping areas, because that's the most likely place where you're going to have them. So if they're not necessarily in the kitchen, that's one thing, but outside of the sleeping areas are the best way to do that. But I think cost is sometimes it's a factor, but for the most part, they're reasonably priced. They're readily available at the different chain stores, and that's why we supplement it with the American Red Cross's help to go ahead and provide those for the residents every time we go to a house.
And here's another one that people forget about, the carbon monoxide detectors.
Yes, those carbon monoxide is labeled as the silent killer. And what this does, this comes from your heating system's incomplete combustion. So when you look at cars running in the garage, you look at an improperly maintained furnace, these are where the source or even your stove, incomplete combustion, this is the source of that carbon monoxide, which is a silent killer because you can't see it or smell it. So that's why they call it the silent killer. But mm-hmm. what we'd like to do is have a detection of that as well. Our members are trained to come out and meter your residents. And we want to make sure everyone's safe. But we have a really good working relationship with the power companies where we do training in-house, where we're trained on this on a regular basis. And we do refreshers annually throughout the year in order to stay on top of things.
We are chatting this morning with Stratford Fire Chief Jermaine Atkinson, and we're talking about fire safety as we head into the colder months. And here's my question for you. I think I saw a story on this a few weeks ago, Chief Atkinson. If you're hard of hearing, what do you do? Like a normal alarm probably wouldn't work. Is there something else that firefighters have started putting into people's homes or have been doing?
Yes, we now install bed shaker alarms. So what that does, it's a device that fits underneath your mattress, and it vibrates the bed to wake you up. It's a strong vibrator to wake you up, and it works off the signal from the fire alarm itself. So we would install a normal smoke alarm, as you normally would, close to the bedroom area. It would pick up on that frequency, and it would vibrate to wake the person up. So we found that our fire marshal's office did some research on this, so we found that we had a hearing-impaired population in Stratford that we were concerned about. And we received some grant funding in order to purchase these bed shaker alarms. And so far to date, we've installed 60 of them in the town of Stratford, in addition to the 826 smoke alarms that we've installed over the last course of the year of this program. And what this does is it helps our hearing impaired residents to sleep a little safer at night. It definitely takes the worry away from some of the parents that I've met when they have their children in a bedroom, and that way, they're safe while they're sleeping, and that's what we're looking for. We're looking to give them that peace of mind that mm-hmm. they can experience by having a fire protection plan and to be safe.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm curious because I think this is really life-changing. Is this something, if you have a child who is hard of hearing, is this some like a device that they could then bring with them to their college dorm?
Absolutely. That's the good thing about this. This device is portable, where you can move it from bed to bed. So even if you're going away on vacation, you can take it with you. You can install it. It's easy to use. It comes with the instructions. And, you know, we're always available for questions to help out because that's what, as a parent myself, that's what we're concerned about, making mm-hmm. sure our kids are always staying safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, is that something that a family has to contact the town about or the fire department? Is it something that they have to pay for? Like, how does that work?
What happens is we have electronic messaging signs out there, and they're moved throughout the town, different locations, in order to target those areas. And what happens is you call the fire marshal's office, and then when you talk to our staff here, we give you the option. We always ask if there's hearing impaired people there that can make use of it. We're also we've printed a postcard, and we've put that postcard out to the community centers in Stratford, the library, the Baldwin Center. Public places like that over at Town Hall so that people are aware of the program. We've also reached out to the doctor's offices for audiovisual doctors in order to reach that demographic and to really expand our reach to the community.
Yeah, I think this. I just think it's amazing. And obviously, this is in Stratford. Do you know if many other fire departments have done the same thing? Obviously, you cover Stratford, Chief Atkinson, so it's okay if the answer is I have no idea. But do you know if a lot of other Connecticut fire departments have invested in this? Like I said, I think this could be really life-changing for families.
I think we're one of the first ones out here. I know
wow.
That a few departments have reached out to us, and we've offered some support to them as well.
That's great.
Especially, you know, parents that call in. And that once they hear about it or it starts to go through the community, I think it's going to be a bigger thing. But I'm glad to say that Stratford's at the front of this where they're reaching out to this demographic and reaching out to people and keeping the community safe.
Yeah.
Like I said, when we talk to the Red Cross has a very large reach as well. So working together with them and combining our resources, that's what really helps us get the best reach out in the community.
Yeah, way to go, Stratford. Now, I'm curious, Chief Atkinson, because I'm sure I will get calls on this, and maybe you do as well. Neighboring towns, if it's something that their department does not offer, you guys are strictly only doing that for Stratford residents, correct?
We are doing it for Stratford residents, but in some extreme emergencies, this was a federally funded grant. So we always try to provide mutual aid and help to our partners. So if you call in, you talk to our Fire Marshal, Robert Daniel, he'd be more than happy to point you in the right direction and help them with the right resources as well.
Well, it's been a real pleasure and honor to talk to you, Stratford Fire Chief Jermaine Atkinson. I thank you so much for your time this morning, and I'm sure I'll have you back on as we get closer to, like, the Thanksgiving, Christmas holidays, because that's when people start cooking like crazy and having a lot of people in their houses and putting on the space heaters. Got to love those space heaters. So I'm sure we'll have you back on very soon.
That'll be great. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me today. It was great talking to you, and glad the information gets out to the community.
Absolutely. And I thank you again for your time. Stratford Fire Chief Jermaine Atkinson right here on WICC. I am so excited to welcome back to the show Rabbi Shlomlanda. And Rabbi, it's been a while. I'm so glad that you're here. How are you?
It's been a while, and I'm really glad to be back with you and your listeners.
I know.
Good morning.
Hi, and Happy New Year. How was your Rosh Hashanah?
Rosh Hashanah was wonderful.
Good.
And it was beautiful.
Did you eat too many matzo balls?
We didn't, but we did have some brisket.
Okay.
And,
yeah, brisket was good.
We, of course, had the apples dipped in honey,
oh.
which is always the... always a highlight symbolizing a sweet new year.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, Rabbi, I had the Department of Ag, I had the commissioner on a couple weeks ago, Brian Hurlburt, and a lovely guy. And he said to me, because of the drought conditions this summer, that the apples were going to be a lot smaller but a lot sweeter. I could tell. I've never eaten so many apples during that 2-day period. I took down probably 3 apples a day, which is not really something I do, but they really were so good. I mean, and you can't hurt when you just keep putting honey on it too. So yeah, it was. I'm thinking it's going to be a real sweet new year. I'm hoping.
I think my 4-year-old might have beat you there.
But, really? Yeah. Wow. All right. Fair enough.
He
listen.
Absolutely loves him.
Oh, I mean, he's got good taste, so I'm not upset about it. Let's talk a little bit about Yom Kippur, because I know it's coming up in just a matter of days. And for some of our listeners, obviously, if you're of the Jewish faith, you're very familiar with what the rabbi and I are talking about, but many others may not be. So first of all, could you talk about the relationship between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Why are they so close in days, and is there a significant connection between the two?
Yeah, sure. So Rosh Hashanah is the traditional Jewish New Year, which is a 2-day holiday, which marks the beginning of the Days of Awe, which are actually a 10-day period, which culminate in Yom Kippur. So it's definitely a connection. It's the first 10 days of the Jewish year. Rosh Hashanah is, like I said, it's the new year. It literally means the head of the year. And according to Jewish tradition, Rosh Hashanah blesses the entire year for all people. You know, it's also the time that we sort of reconnect and almost coronate God as our sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
And that's symbolized by the blowing of the shofar, which is a ram's horn. And then that culminates in Yom Kippur 10 days later, which is known as the Day of Atonement. So the entire 10-day period is really one of introspection and reflection and sort of trying to reconnect with our inner core. It's called the 10 days of repentance. Repentance are, in Hebrew, we refer to that as teshuva, is the Hebrew word for repentance. And literally, teshuva is translated as return, which is essentially the soul's capacity to return to its pristine core, to its essential being. You know, we go through life, and none of us are perfect. Mm-hmm. We always make a mistake, and invariably, we are, you know, going to have misjudgments, but that's not defining of us. Our innermost self,
mm-hmm.
the essence of our soul, that remains untouched. And teshuva is that process of, you know, really the God-given ability to access and to reconnect to that untouched self, and to redefine any negative past in a purifying light.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what Yom Kippur is about. It's God's forgiving humanity sins, both as individuals as well as community. And so traditionally Jews spend a day in prayer like I said, trying to reconnect with our inner selves, thanking God for His forgiveness, and focusing on self-improvement for the year ahead. So that's in a nutshell what Yom Kippur is focused on.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Rabbi, but don't people usually fast during Yom Kippur too?
Right. So Because the focus is on prayer and spiritual matters, so because of that, we're not eating and drinking or working. We sort of detach a little bit from the mundane everyday occupations.
Would you consider Yom Kippur to be like one of the holiest, if not the holiest day of the year for the Jewish? Yeah.
So Yom Kippur is considered the holiest day of the Jewish year.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, because so like I think in the Christian religion, it would be Sunday, Easter Sunday, when Jesus rose from the dead. I would think that's our holiest day of the year, or maybe it's Christmas. I'm not sure. I'd have to double check that. But I thought Yom Kippur is the holiest day for the Jew.
Yes. Okay. Yom Kippur is the holiest day in the Jewish calendar.
Interesting. So then tell us a little bit for you, Rabbi, what does this holiday mean for you? This journey from, you know, celebrating obviously well wishes for an amazing year and also recapping what year we just came from to now going to really connecting with your faith, connecting with the Lord and all of that. You know, what does this time of the year really mean for you?
So there's also a tradition on Yom Kippur that we wear white clothing, but it's for me personally it's a you know a sort of remembering the fact that we are all the same, we're all one. You know, throughout the year we're all going in our own different directions, all focused on different areas of our life. We're doing different things, involved in different things, might prioritize different things. You know, on Yom Kippur, it's sort of everybody, you know, the entire Jewish community comes to the synagogue. We're all there together. It's that unity. It's that essential oneness which we all share. And I think if, you know, in terms of what it really means for me more than anything else, it's just that reminder that we're all one, you know, that we have external differences, sure, but we're all part of that core of humanity, and we're all striving to make this world a better place, and that's what life's all about. That hits home on Yom Kippur.
I love that. Well, I do wish you obviously a wonderful holiday season, and certainly I know we'll be having you back on in a matter. It's so interesting because there's only. So Lisa Wexler, obviously, who comes on after me, she's Jewish. There's only a couple of other Jews here with me here in the building. So I'm always often asked these, you know, like the questions of, OK, so what's next? Is this, you know, what are we feeling now? So it was funny because I have a colleague of mine who is always very interested in learning different religions. And he asks the same question every year. He's like, which one is the happy one and which one is the serious one is what he always calls it. And I'm always like, Rosh Hashanah is New Year and Yom Kippur is more where you're like, you're really reflecting and you're repenting and you're connecting with God. And so that's how I always have to differentiate it. But it's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that. You know, Rosh Hashanah is definitely the more celebratory one.
Right.
And Yom Kippur is definitely more solemn.
Right.
But I would refer to Yom Kippur as a holiday as well, as a joyous day.
I think so.
It's an inner joy. I mean, when we connect to our true essence, you know, when we're able to tap into that core, that's a really powerful and joyful experience.
Oh, and the peace you feel. Like for me, when you disconnect from everything, you shut everything off, and you even your own need to eat, and you're so focused on this. I find that to be very peaceful. Like it could feel tough at points, but really it's this beautiful opportunity for self-growth, but self-awareness and peace. I don't know. I've always loved Yom Kippur. I don't know. I've always liked it. So
I agree with you.
Well, there you go. That's why we're such good friends.
That's right. There you go.
That's why we get it. Rabbi Shlom Landa, I always love having you on the show. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, and a happy new year to everybody.
Thank you. Thank you, too. You too, my friend.